Just in case you don't stick with us through the entire show, there's something I want to mention right off the top. Our guest today, Bob Sturm, has been working with Cornerstone Clothes Closet in South Dallas for a number of years. Now, what's interesting about this group, while they serve anyone in need, 80% of the people who visit the Clothes Closet are men. So they're always in need of men's clothing, jeans, polo shirts, underwear, anything a guy would typically need. So he's organized clothing drives at his radio station, The Ticket, for a long time. This year, because of COVID-19, that may not be able to happen. So instead of being able to drop off your clothes, think about giving a donation online. CornerstoneDallas.org is the website. You can click on our ministries and go down to Clothes Closet. And again, that's CornerstoneDallas.org. Appreciate anything you can give. Now, here's Kibo.
Yeah, no longer neighbors, hosted by Chris and Aaron. Used to live next door, Dallas, Texas, representing. But then Aaron moved away. Yeah, that's the situation. So join the podcast, get in on the conversation. Yeah, authentic, real friends, I admit it. Still keeping the connection, it don't matter about the distance. You don't have to wait up, I'ma tell you straight up. Entertaining for sure, this is no longer neighbors. Yeah.
There is now a rap song about us, Aaron. Not anything that either of us would have expected in our lifetime, but yeah, that's the theme song. Kibo, thanks for putting that together for us. Also, we have a logo now. Clint Doggett Design making that. So, you know, we're all professional and stuff. This is cool.
Yeah, Chris, I'm really excited about the podcast and the guest we have today.
Yeah, Bob Sturm, you'll hear that conversation in just a couple of minutes. Host on the top sports radio station in the country, KTCK in Dallas. Plenty to talk about with him. It's not just about sports. It's about his faith. It's about current world events. Gets really in-depth and interesting. And whether you're a sports fan or not, it's going to be something that I think you're going to find really intriguing. So we'll have Bob in just a couple of minutes, but we wanted to start with really what this year has taught us. 2020, definitely the strangest in our lifetimes for me in my 41 years. Aaron, why don't you start off? What has 2020 taught you?
Yeah, it's almost hard to pick one thing, right? Because 2020 has had so many up and down emotions, mostly down for most folks. But we'll share a little bit later in some of the podcast about our personal journeys and some of the things that have happened during COVID. But just in general, one of the things that struck me really early on was that this year has caused us to kind of refocus maybe on family more than ever before. And part of that is just because we've been inside, or maybe the main reason is because we've been inside with our families. The majority of people have stopped going to work, that work in kind of office type jobs, right? Where there's many people who I know had to continue to go to their jobs. But in my neighborhood, for example, I've never seen so many people taking a walk as a family as in March, April, and May of this year. I've never seen so many dads that typically travel on a weekly and monthly basis home with their families, playing baseball in the yard and doing things like that. And it's just really struck me at how, you know, slowing things down a bit has caused us to refocus on what's important. And as over, you know, 100,000 Americans now, well over 100,000 Americans have lost their loved ones due to COVID-19, you know, just to take a moment and as a dad kind of, you know, feel like, what is it like to just value your family and the fact that you can spend time with them? It's something that I'll admit I'm not always great at doing. And even when you're at home, you know, when you have little children running around, I know, Chris, you know how this is like, what this is like. It's sometimes difficult, even when you're at home, to focus on the kids, right? We have work to do, even though, you know, we might not be working at an office, we still have jobs to do. And it can be difficult. But For me, it's, you know, what's important? How can I work on doing that better as a dad and as a person and as a husband? And I won't say it's been perfect. So it's a journey, but I'm glad that we had this time to refocus. I'm not glad on why it happened, but I am glad that, you know, it's caused a lot of people to reevaluate the relationship. So I'm interested to hear, you know, what you think and how 2020 has kind of impacted you.
Well, you say, you know, everybody has jobs they have to do at home. For me, with the pandemic, that meant my job went away. Since September, I've been working as a freelance sports broadcaster, and I did two games on March 11th, the Conference USA women's basketball tournament, and then everything else after that was canceled. So I haven't had any work to do. I did finish up a semester of grad school online, and then took the summer off to worry about personal issues. But, you know, more than anything else, I think 2020, my personal values, I think, have been, I've had to look at those as far as dealing with, you know, the racial unrest in this country. I think I was somebody who would have fallen on the side of not understanding what Black Lives Matter means and not being willing to say that. But I've been listening. I've been trying to understand better about what that means. And I fully embrace now Black Lives Matter. I would have been somebody who said all lives matter. But, you know, so many, and even, you know, it's biblical reasoning on why that should be what is said in this moment. You know, you care about the other 99, but you are concerned more with the one that is in peril. But as I said last week, I don't want to stay the same person. I want to continuously evolve. So 2020 has certainly helped me change. But now let's get into our conversation with Bob Sturm. Those of you not from Dallas may not be familiar with the name, but he has been with Sports Radio 1310, 96.7, The Ticket, since 1999. Hosted Bad Radio, which is the midday show, from 2000 through this year, and now has shifted to the afternoon drive show, The Hardline. Does a lot of other stuff, writes for The Athletic, used to call Stars games, FC Dallas games, very, very busy guy. But in addition to what he does with sports, and obviously he's an expert in countless topics there, he started recently to open up about his faith a little bit more on air. Aaron, what struck you most about our conversation with him?
Bob is just a real guy, and he has, you know, opinions like anyone else, and he's using his platform. And so one thing that I find interesting kind of, you know, in our background, sometimes we tend to shy away from famous people talking about controversial issues, right? We tend to say, hey, those stars in Hollywood should stick in their lane and make movies, right? But when they say something that we agree with, or if an athlete comes out and, you know, thanks God or does something, right? A lot of times we're there to champion them, right? And so I think in 2020, my eyes have opened a bit more to us using whatever platform we have. And Bob has a pretty big platform. And he was unashamed at talking about things that are important to him. It doesn't mean that's going to be every day all the time. He's made that clear. And I think for our listeners, they should know this is not necessarily a political show, right? It's not a religious show. We will talk about topics that are important to Chris and I and hopefully important to you. And those things are going to be in the mix, right? So I love Bob's willingness to kind of get outside of his comfort zone.
Don't be intimidated by the length. We go about 90 minutes with Bob, but I think it's all valuable. Feel free and pause, come back later, but you'll want to hear all this. Our conversation with Bob Sturm.
So I wanted to start, you and I have kind of a common background. I've listened to some of your stuff on The Ticket as well as some of the podcasts you've been on. And I remember when I moved to Dallas, it's been about 12 years ago, people asked me where I was from, and I told them that I had just moved to Dallas after graduating from Liberty. Okay. And almost everywhere I went universally, people said, oh, Liberty, that's where Bob Sturm went to school. That was like the connection. The only reason why anyone in DFW knew of Liberty was because of you. So I know recently, you know, becoming a Liberty grad has been a little bit different with some of the stuff that's been in the media and stuff. Can you tell us about why you went to Liberty in the first place? And then what has that experience been like as an alumni, as, you know, kind of the perception of the university has evolved?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I guess it starts with the real reason I went to Liberty was I wanted to play basketball. And I, my parents raised me extremely conservatively to a point where, and people never believe me when I say this, but it's absolutely true, and my wife had a similar experience, is that where we come from, Liberty was thought of as pretty left. And people don't believe that's possible, and I'm telling you it is, because we went to a really small Christian school that had a lot of ideal schools to send you to, but Liberty was not one of them. And, you know, even at an early age, I was probably a bit of a free thinker on a, at least relative level there. And so it kind of came down to, hey, my parents, very blue collar, they're going to help you get through school, but they also want you to kind of play ball with their wishes. And their wishes were that you didn't go to a secular school, that you went to a school that, you know, could continue to work on your faith and all that as you get older and start making your own decisions. So it really quickly reduced to Division I basketball and believes in God sort of school. And clearly now looking back, you know, there are other places that would fit that description, but at the time it felt like a list of one. And Liberty had been very, very young in their Division I run. And I thought I could play basketball at that level. And so that was the absolute pure reason I ended up at Liberty. And I had a great experience there. I really did. But at the time, you know, I was either naive or oblivious or didn't care or whatever about, you know, the worldwide message of how faith is consumed, because that was so far off my radar as an 18-year-old. I just wanted to try to play basketball. And, you know, it's been a departure, but at the same time, you know, it's different people. Jerry Falwell Jr., who is their main and maybe only voice right now, he wasn't even on campus. He was off being a lawyer at the time. I've never met the guy. I've never been in the same room with the guy. His dad, who has his own list of probably problematic quotes and things over the course of time, he was a good friend of mine. And I love the dude. You know, he's obviously died, and now, you know, his history is all people are left with. But, you know, we had a number of interactions. Almost every one of them was positive. He was warm. He was caring. And if you knew him, you know, I think you would at least admire that aspect of him and what I thought was authenticity. So, you know, his son probably doesn't care what I think of carrying on that legacy. But I think he's taken a real sharp turn off his dad's, you know, warmth and welcoming and that sort of thing. And like I said, his dad wasn't perfect. And you know, as I remember some of his, you know, labels and quotes from back then, they definitely wouldn't play well in 2020 either. But at least knowing the guy, he was authentic and he wasn't, in my opinion, trying to launch his own political career, which I kind of think, you know, his son has every intention of doing.
Bob, you and I first met, and you probably don't remember this. I brought it up at a remote at some point, but I was working for ESPN Radio and hanging out in the auxiliary press box where the radio guys tended to congregate, and you and Dan McDowell walk in and meet you guys for the first time. And I got to sit on the, be a fly on the wall while you guys discussed what to call your new show.
That's
wild. And it ended up being bad radio 5,000 shows later. And I just want to kind of take you back to that time when you first got to Dallas. The show was about to get on the air. You had an incredible run and now have moved on to the 3-7 slot. But did you have any expectation of, you know, I hope I can hang out here for 5 years? Or did you expect it to be, man, I really hope I can make this the home for the rest of my life?
Yeah, well, I had no idea what to think, you know. I mean, I had been at the Ticket, I guess, by that day, like 9 months or 10 months, and had been doing nights. And, you know, when I got to Dallas, yeah, it was absolutely try to survive in this industry. And beyond that, there were no, you know, dreams of, hey, can this be my last job or you know, what's next? It was just, man, I was in Lynchburg, and I was a college student, or I was a guy making roughly $15,000 a year hosting my own show. And, yeah, I realize, you know, money isn't the same as it was in 1995, but 15,000 is 15,000. We were, my wife and I were extremely poor, and, you know, I had told her dad that, you know, I was going to take care of her and all that sort of thing, but I also wanted to talk about football for a living. And so, you know, from there in 98, we had actually told our parents that we were moving back to Wisconsin, and, you know, I had given sports media the best I could, but, you know, now 4 years later, maybe I should just get a real job. We can move around our families and we can do whatever, and I can, you know, get a normal job like normal people and it will be fine. And right when we decided to do that is when the Dallas door opened up. And so it's crazy, and any run of success or whatever that's almost taken me to my 48th birthday is pretty ridiculous. And you know, I have a hard time understanding how it all fell into place, but I'm incredibly grateful that it has. And you know, it's all kind of starting to feel like it was a build towards an opportunity to use my platform for some, you know, some reason beyond football. And, you know, not everyone's going to appreciate that. And I, you know, I spent 20 years kind of trying to just model with my walk more than my talk that I'm a little bit different. And part of that was, you know, lack of courage, maybe. Part of it was just wanting to fit in and be cool. Part of it was not wanting to ruffle feathers. And so, you know, gradually with the adoption of the mission trips and then you know, the work with poverty and things like that, these are all things I think everybody can agree on in general. So probably this month in 2020 is the first time I really started speaking out about something that even my parents want to argue with me about and things like that. So I guess I tried to lay a foundation and establish a reputation and maybe never speak about, you know, touchy topics. And then, you know, I guess that led me to kind of thinking maybe there's a higher purpose to this great job and this great life that might be, you know, can you touch anyone? Can you make anyone think a little more about this particular topic? And, you know, it's been weird. And frankly, it's not me. I certainly like being liked and, you know, I think most people are cool with it, but I'm not out looking for conflict. So I realize when you dip your toes into those waters, you are asking for conflict, and you know, it's true, and they're out there. So you can either fixate on the 80% that are happy you did something, or fixate on the 20% that don't. And it's human nature to fixate on the conflict, I suppose, unless you're really strong mentally. And I have way thicker skin than I did 25 years ago, but I still probably am pretty insecure, and that's just being a human, I think.
I just had to check and make sure I wasn't sharing my screen on the conference call, because it seemed like you were almost going note for note on what I wanted to talk about there. No, it's fantastic. Just the living by example, exactly what I wanted to bring up. And I think that's really how I've tried to be too in my walk. And, you know, and it's led to some great conversations and seeing friends accept Jesus as their savior. And, you know, it's not anything that I did. Like you said, it's all God. It's coming from him. But, you know, I have also had recent times. I went to the Army Navy game this past year, sports bucket list thing.
Yeah.
And President Trump is there, and I just couldn't keep my big mouth shut. I said something about him that my dad did not appreciate, and we got into a little bit of a conversation, and he turns and looks like, I cannot believe my son is a liberal. Really? Just because I disagree with you on a couple of little things. Okay. So,
yeah, same.
But you're getting that same thing now.
Yeah.
But you know, that segment you did, that's kind of getting a lot of talk, not just in Dallas, but really everywhere. And it was labeled on the Ticket podcast page as Bob's Faith and Doing What's Right. What was, if there was anything, the final breaking point to make you decide, I'm going to put this on the run sheet today?
Man, I don't think we did. I think it just happened, to be honest. And, you know, you know, some things just happen organically and I just go for it at the time. And if you think about it ahead of time, you probably wouldn't do it. I don't know. I don't know what made me speak up, but I think it's a gradual journey. And I just, you know, I think what triggered me the most was well before George Floyd or Ahmaud Arbery or any of this stuff. What triggered me the most, honestly, and I realize this is another can of worms that you guys didn't even ask me about, was the immigration stuff a couple years ago. And to me, I thought that it's all perception, right? When I speak my mind, it's 100% opinion. I don't speak for God. And I certainly don't speak for hours and hours and hours of academic research study to make sure I have everything right. It is anecdotal. It is me going through my journey and telling you what my observations are. So I say all that to say, when we were going through the election last time around, and it seemed to center around building a wall, securing our borders. Okay, well, who are we securing our borders from? Well, we're securing our borders from those people that are trying to cross our border to ourself. Okay, let's unpack this a little more, can we? Well, you know, honestly, the reality is one thing, but the perception that is being shared with people in middle America or wherever who've never come close to the border or certainly come close to a place like Honduras or Guatemala or Mexico, except maybe on like a cruise or a all-inclusive resort, which is not the reality of those countries any more than Disneyland is the reality of what California is. So, I think the perception that is shared by people that have a platform is super important. Well, that's being shared is that, you know, most people trying to get up here are bringing drugs and gangs with them and people who probably have real sincere, you know, earnest beliefs and motivations in life are believing it and then repeating it. And then before long, it spreads like this virus, this wildfire, that anyone with brown skin trying to cross the border is not doing it to find a better life like all of our ancestors might have. It's to bring crime and to rape and to kill and to do all these things. I just thought it was so, so horrible. Well, by extension, it seems like the news would often find voices to talk about this sort of thing. And it was my perception over the course of many months and many anecdotal moments that a lot of the people that seem to have the most anger in their face about the brown people trying to get into our country happen to be really affluent white Christians. You know, maybe people that go to my church or other churches or churches like my church, you know, who are really going to dig in about, we need this wall. You know, why do we need this wall? Well, you don't want your mom to get attacked by these gangsters, do you? Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't, but I don't think that's really what's going on here, guys. I think we're talking about, and there's documentaries everywhere, and you can see the reality of the train that, you know, has people riding on top of it, and many of them are kids, and many, you know, what they're humans, and you know, if you meet immigrants, you will find that many of them are as poor gets. I've said this a million times, but I've been to an orphanage or a couple that are actually located in junkyards or landfills or surrounded by, you know, and that's the reality. But it's also, you know, some level of irony is that's kind of what they are to humanity, unfortunately, is they're just this discarded human life. And so that's really what put it on my heart, is it felt like, since we politicize everything, well, the political divide appears to be empathy towards a Honduran teenager, one who lives in my house, obviously, probably makes this more of my platform, but you know, people not like us trying to get to this country just to, you know, be part of it all. And we flip that into, I'm not paying taxes to pay for all these freeloaders and all this sort of thing. And, you know, that really hurt me. That really struck me as the opposite of what would Jesus do. And like I said, I did not spend my whole life in this field. It's just my opinion that the WWJD bracelets that became somewhat cliche and hilarious to many and mocked, you know, I think it's my entire faith now. You know, there's a lot of great people in the church. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of great institutions. There's a lot of great Christian universities and all this. But if the overall message is we need to build walls and fear people who aren't from our culture, and basically worry about our tax rates and our gun laws and you know, all these things that I don't think Jesus felt strongly to defend your tax rates. By the way, I make great money. I really do. And I should pay more taxes to help those who don't. That's, to me, that's the compassion of Jesus. That's in the Gospels, is to take care of the orphans and the widows. And so, you know, I guess I had to make a personal decision on what was more important to me, you know, my faith or, you know, the direction the world of religion seems to approach, that we can't let, you know, the Supreme Court justices, or we can't let the Democrats win or the liberals win. And look, I'm certainly not buying that jersey overall, but I do think, if I have to say, you know, what would Jesus do in every situation, every political situation, I keep coming back to, man, I'm not sure I have a political party, but I'm definitely going to oppose a political party that seems to suggest they're speaking for Jesus in one hand, and then allowing kind of the NRA or you know, all these other political things that I just don't think is part of my faith. I feel like somebody has to speak up for that and still love the Lord and still love, you know, what I was, the faith I was raised in. So I know that's convoluted and a mile from maybe your original question, but, you know, it's all kind of attached, I guess.
No, you're definitely right there, Bob. And I echo your sentiments and some of the situations that you and Chris had talked about being in with family and relatives and friends, right, being labeled in a certain way. I think it's really interesting. This is kind of where we've gotten, right? And so just a little backstory here. The show title is No Longer Neighbors, and we're going to talk about why that is. But essentially, Chris and I used to be neighbors, and we're not, right? It's not a mystery. But when my wife heard the title, she actually had a different reaction, which was that she thought that the title was about the kind of political environment that we're in America by calling it No Longer Neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I sat back and I thought about that as Chris and I have been talking about topics for the show. And I was like, that's really interesting, right? Because it really feels like we've gotten to this place where we are so polarized, that word has been used a couple times, right? And, you know, why is it, right? There's some interesting debates. I actually got to watch I think it's the Sunday special by Ben Shapiro, which is a very controversial figure on the right. But he sat down with somebody from the left, if you will, Ezra Klein, who's known for Vox Media and one of the founders of Vox Media. And they had their discussion about why we're so polarized, right? In fact, I think Ezra wrote a book about it. And it was one of the most important and interesting philosophical discussions. But based, you know, from our point of view, I think we're all coming at this, we've admitted, from kind of a Christian point of view, having similar experiences and similar upbringings. What do you think is the reason why we're so polarized now, and why the discussion, we talked a little bit about why you decided to speak out now, but why America, why is America in general so polarized, and why are we getting to this point in 2020, do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a lot to it. I also think I'm probably not a great expert on the exact origin, but yes, what I thought, I think it's convincing everyone this is a two-party world and you've got to pick a side, right? And if you don't pick side A, well, then you're obviously with side B, and now we can fight. I don't know when the discourse got here. But I do know now it generally doesn't feel like anybody authentically wants solutions. They want to win this volley of fights. And sometimes even that's labeled, well, let's have a healthy discourse here and really go over things. Well, you know, I just don't know that it's generally from sincere motives. It's more, I got to own this clown on the other side, right? And I've got to, then I can grandstand to all of my constituents that, look, I just took this guy down in 30 seconds and his debates are also garbage. And look at me, I just won, you know? And if we're never actually coming from a sincere standpoint of, okay, what do we have in common? What do we believe in? How can we help? And man, I'm going to go back to orphans and widows, man. If we can't agree on the such things as orphans. I mean, if we just have a disconnect on, here's a kid who has no parents who take care of him. He is a child, uneducated, without possessions to his name. Do as humans, as Americans, do we take care of this or don't we? I mean, that's one issue. But I think it's a very basic issue, at least to me. And that's what I saw at the border. You know, that's what I saw with my own eyes, you know, helpless, you know, innocent, adorable children. And I don't mean adorable in appearance, just their little hearts. They can do anything in their life, maybe, if someone cares about them, or they can. And, you know, that's, I think, the motivation for adoption and all that sort of thing is, you know, do you want to, you know, bring this kid a pair of tennis shoes, or do you want to change his life? And, you know, do you want to try to welcome him into your own family and all these sorts of things? So I guess what I'm saying is the polarization, the divide of it's either us or them, like it's a football game, has taken us away from, you know, as humans, what's the greater good? What can we do? What can we change? There's a lot of ugliness in this world, a lot of brokenness. You know, I think the number that Buckner uses, and I don't know if it's true, but let's say it's only half true. They say there's 140 million orphans on this planet right now. Okay, let's say it's only 70. 70 million? Okay, I think we have our work cut out for us. We don't have to argue about, you know, a bunch of other things. If we have this task as sort of our initiative, our, you know, what we want to do differently. So social media, you know, cable news on either side, you know, and just all these things allow us to lose the plot. And I hope that airplane isn't helping me, you know, doing the same thing right now.
You're okay.
But I would say in general, when I look at something like that, when I look at these problems, it reminds me of even this week, for instance. Okay, so this week we all went down the rabbit trail of sports nicknames like the Texas Rangers.
We're going to get into that, yeah.
Okay, and is it problematic? And to me, that's the same example of what you just asked me about, is now we've taken the problem and we've moved 3 miles down the road, and now we're debating a baseball team that was named 50 years ago. And how problematic it is. And I'm not saying there's no problems to that at all. What I'm saying is now we have refocused our energies from what did we start to get into this conversation to how many left turns have we taken to now we actually forgot what we started talking about. And that I think is the human condition, is that before long we are debating background checks on gun purchases when the initial discussion was, hey, should we help poor people, you know, and just all these types of things. And so, and I think it all comes from an insincere desire when the debate starts on what are we trying to accomplish here? Am I trying to find common ground with you in solutions, or am I trying to beat your rear end so I win the election against you? And I think we know the answer. And I think it's probably how politicians become politicians. And then, like me trying to stay at the ticket in Dallas, they're trying to stay politicians because it's given them and their family a good life. And so they just feed more into the machine, and round we go.
Yeah, I think you've said a couple interesting things here that I really identify with, right? So between your comments now, your comments on the ticket, and on some podcasts I've heard you talk about being kind of a man without a country politically, right? And I think there's a lot of people like Chris and I and people that we know that have felt a little bit like that when we've brought up these discussions with our families, friends, churches, right? Like, you know, as you said, I'm not buying either jersey at the moment. And sometimes I think there's a little bit of a disparagement of people in that situation. And I think there's probably a ton of them, right? And so much that they hide because it's like, well, it's your civic duty to vote, right? And you have to pick a team and that kind of a thing. So I think it's really interesting that, you know, you've chosen this time to kind of speak out about that. But I just wanted to tell you, you're not alone, right? I think some of the Twitter reactions that you've gotten have been positive and some of them have been negative. But as I'm sure you've seen being on the radio, there's always going to be haters. And when you talk about issues that are this intense, right, there's going to be people that blow back. But you've made another interesting point too. And I kind of feel this way, which is that as people of faith, we have started to sometimes elevate our politics over our religion. And, you know, it's kind of hard, right? Because you don't want to say it shouldn't influence your politics. It should, right? Yeah. It absolutely should. But you also don't want it to become the driving factor. And so I just think, like, in this time, what do you think that we can do, just kind of on your thought, to make practical differences? You're a radio host, right? So you've been able to speak out and kind of use your platform. But what about everybody who doesn't have a show or doesn't have a podcast? Do you have any, you know, interactions that you could share that you think would be helpful for the listeners, viewers?
Wow, that's a deep one for sure. I mean, honestly, I think it's often an internal question of what would you give up for this one particular issue? And you know, with my parents, and it, you know, wasn't helpful. And my brother, who's a preacher, we've sent each other things, including his own sermon, where he suggests that we should be one issue voters on abortion. And he preached that, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, and he wanted me to listen to it. And I did. And my volley back to him and my volley to everybody is, okay, if you're against abortion, and I think, you know, Jesus probably, not probably, Jesus would be, I'm willing to say that, but I don't know that he would give up issues 2 through 99 to get that one. So that's my general point is, okay, if we all agree that there are a couple issues in the Bible that, Jesus would stand hard for, do we believe that there's just one, or do we believe that sin is sin? Do we believe that this one does not cancel out these five? Just something as simple as, do I believe Jesus would feel strongly about like healthcare for all and food for all and reasonable schooling for all and all these things? And I mean, yes, I absolutely believe that when he said, take care of the poor and take care of the widows and the orphans, I don't believe he was joking. So my challenge was, you know, to myself is, you know, am I going to keep chasing the idea that it seems my university absolutely would always, you know, kind of meld patriotism and faith together. You know, if we can convince people that the flag is God and that our forefathers are disciples, if we can meld it all together, then we're sort of worshiping patriotism a little bit, and we believe that the USA is God's favorite country and all these things. And if we can do that, then of course we can make sense of closing the border, and we can make sense of, yes, they are women and children who need help, but they're not our women and children. When my wife and I adopted, there were people, and I'm positive they thought they were coming from a good place, but they were super offended that we adopted from out of the country when there are so many of our children in this country who need help. How, you know, what are you doing? And my thought back then, and I probably channeled my inner Bono a little bit, is just, you know, the God I believe in isn't worried about the lines we all drew on a map. You know, I mean, okay, there are borders. And by the way, borders change throughout the sands of time. Grab an old map. Grab a atlas, you know, that demonstrated what the world looked like borders-wise 300 years ago or 500 years ago. You'll be amazed. Well, if you believe God is omnipotent and omnipresent and omniscient and all these things, well, then you know that God can predate the latest atlas being printed. And so, you know, my challenge would be to anybody is to kind of think for yourself and not think of what our institutions have told you to think, and just try to find truth. And you can start with the gospel, in my opinion. But I also recognize that you then have to walk the slippery slope of, you know, believing that book and also knowing when people who suggest they come on behalf of that book in real time might be full of it. It happens. You know, if you are saying I follow my pastor like he's Jesus, I think he might be making a really bad move. I love my pastor. I really do. I picked him very carefully. I don't know that he's infallible. And I think he would say I'm not infallible. You know, he's had some takes he'd like back probably. And that's why I think marching like zombies, because this guy held up a Bible and said, you know, this is, if you're on the Bible side, get behind me and keep marching and let's go. Let's go take out all those people that don't believe in this holy war. I just think that's super, super unhealthy. And I think it's exactly the opposite of WWJD to me.
Just to kind of wrap that thought, one thing that I thought was interesting is I think on another dumb podcast is what it's called. You shared that in reality, this is a political discussion and a religious discussion, but in some ways it's not, right? You have thought of this, I don't know what you'd call it. I hate to use the word woke, right? But this awakening and this journey that you've taken over time as this is just who I am, right? Yeah. And this is just my experience. And I think that I've been in this situation too, which was as we grow older and we get more experiences, you know, sometimes we're told to back off the religion and politics, and it's really hard to disconnect that, right? It's like, how do you disconnect the message of Jesus, if you will, if you're a Christian, from who you are? That's not something you, I would think you would want to do. And so we've blurred a lot of lines there, but.
Well, you know, I mean, on that front, Aaron, I would just say, I think that it's pretty, I don't think anything I've said, honestly, ever has been political. I really don't. I mean, do I have a personal problem with Jerry Falwell Jr.? Yes. Do I have a personal problem with some of Donald Trump's tactics? Absolutely. It's not a political thing. It's I believe you are misleading people intentionally thing. And so I would say that of anybody in my line of work. Like if I thought someone up at the ticket was intentionally misleading people about Jerry Jones or Jason Garrett, I think it's my job to speak up if I disagree, if I have a platform, you know? And so I know it's complex, but I keep coming back to, you know, some of these issues are way bigger than the next election or the next Supreme Court justice confirmation or anything. And if you believe God is bigger than than that. If you believe he's real, and if you believe he has a lifespan greater than a normal human, which I would assume either both answers are yes or both answers are no. I can't imagine someone's like, yeah. Anyway, I would then say that for any of us in 10 years, the 2020 election or the 2016 election will quickly fade to a line on a almanac. So I don't think, losing your way of your role in some sort of eternal game or some sort of thing that outlives all of us, like racism, for instance. It started way before any of us were alive, and it will probably be alive way after we're all gone. And so if you believe that's way more important than who wins the 2016 or the 2020 election, which I do, then politics is just kind of in the back seat. And I know people don't want to believe that. They want to believe, and cable news makes a living off it by convincing you that the world is going to change one way or the other on November 3rd. And okay, I'm not saying it won't. I'm just saying I think there are issues, hunger, and all these things that are going to outlive all of these humans, whether you're voters or you're running, if you're the elect, so that's how I face it. And so when people say, okay, well, will you be an activist for this candidate? Not really. I'm not. That's not me. There's enough people out there that are activists in politics. I don't want to completely say I'm apolitical, because clearly if I really think there is an unhealthy person in office or trying to get in office, I absolutely have feelings about it. So that's the opposite of being apolitical. But it's not my motivation, and I don't think it's my message at all. And that's where people get really excited, especially people that have like American flags on their profile pages. They want to fight me right now because I guess I'm trying to beat them in this political game that they play every day. And that's not my motivation in the slightest.
Yeah, I was a political science major to start off in college, and you'll find pictures on my Facebook page of me attending the Southern Republican Leadership Conference back in the day. So and now I'm a man without a party. So it's definitely been a journey for me too. But as you mentioned, this is something that in the grand scheme is unimportant, but it is an issue of the week. And for me, it's a little bit personal. It's been interesting to see the discussion, because the column that really, I think, vaulted this to center stage on the Texas Rangers changing their team name. The column was written by my stepfather, Steve Chapman, who's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And now I see all of my fellow Texans bashing him and, worry about Chicago, leave this to the Texans. Like, he was born in Brady, Texas, and just so happens to work for a Chicago newspaper now. But he texted me with this idea last Sunday about writing a column on this subject. And honestly, I hadn't even considered it at that point. It's like, change the Rangers. What are you talking about?
Right.
But, he made his thoughts pretty crystal clear, and I'll read just one paragraph from his column. Like the Confederate names on Army bases, the team deserves to be relegated to the dark garbage dump of history. It's an undeserved tribute that reflects a widespread ignorance at best of the Rangers' malignant past. And, seeing all the comments and the hate mail that he's been getting, it's more from people who just see the headline and don't even read the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind if you read the book or read the article and then think about it and decide, oh, it's still fine. But if you're not even willing to listen, that's the part I don't get.
Yeah. No, I agree on that. The issue's complex because, at its core, we are talking about some sort of governmental institution, right? And I think we're finding with our police and with with our soldiers, and I know nobody is actually to my knowledge, called their sports team the Troops or our Soldiers or anything like that. And I don't think they'd be allowed to, but there are machinations of that. We have the New England Patriots, and we definitely have commemorated them in the past. And so the slippery slope, of course, is do you believe any of our troops have ever done something absolutely horrible and just, you know, and we've seen it. I mean, you know, we know that what the answer is, and we know that we have had folks in the USA uniforms brought to court martials and things like that for violating things in the field of battle or while, quote, doing their job. We absolutely have, and just for those who don't know, I have, I believe, double-digit policemen in my family. So I back the blue. I love them all. And I know that every day when they go to work, it's a very dangerous thing. And they are absolutely doing their best to do the right thing for the citizens. They are not evil people. And I don't believe it's an evil institution as much as it is an institution that is pretty normal in that they have taken a lot of wrong turns and they need a lot of reform. And it's not something that just happens like once. It's like mowing your lawn, you know, it's like cleaning out your garage. Reform is a constant thing because so is humanity. So are the circumstances. I mean, it's always changing. So while I did read the story and I would like to read the book, but I'd also probably need a vacation to do it. I'm willing to say, I don't know the complete spectrum of the acts of the Texas Rangers, but it is my understanding. It's a governmental institution that at its core is to, you know, protect and to serve and these types of things. And they took many wrong turns and many of them motivated racially, it does seem like. And so the question is, okay, well, what do we go back and do? And I guess my answer overall is, if I think it can affect the present tense and the future tense in some sort of productive way, let's talk about it. If I think it's kind of either indifferent or past tense, then maybe we can focus on the issues at hand that are a little more pressing. But I, you know, like I said, I know that one's complex. And I honestly, if you would have said, Bob, write down 10 sports nicknames that you think are going to come under fire in the next decade, the Rangers would have been like 300th. Yeah. It never even occurred to me. And I don't know the right answer to that, but I do think it is textbook. It's not your stepdad. Love Field acted like in what appeared to be like 30 minutes from
right.
being made aware of this book to, dude, this has to come down right now. So
yeah.
So maybe if it's that cut and dried, maybe I'm swimming way out of my depths right now. That's highly possible. But it just, I would get concerned because then it turns into this horrible tennis match of whataboutism that both sides are so good at. Is if you're going to get mad at this, what about this, this, and this? And then you have people with disingenuous motivations who actually, you know, are now, you know, trumpeting this other issue as if they actually cared about it, when in reality it just helped them to own the libs or to get the conservatives back on their heels a little bit. And I think that even happened with George Floyd when David Dorn was killed, is that now the entire other side is like, well, why don't you care about this guy as much? Well, we do, you know. And then it just turns into another screaming match. And so I the particular issue is probably very important. It just feels like another case of taking the eye off the actual ball that everyone arrived to try to address, or maybe not everyone did try to address it. Maybe this is just a great tactic at, you know, the sleight of hand of the political discourse in this country. So that's probably an unsatisfactory answer, but that's what's been going through my head since thinking about it is, yeah. I get that there's probably tons of problems there. But then where do we draw the line? And do we work all the way back to trying to scrub Mount Rushmore because of the slave ownership of them and, you know, some of the untoward things that they were found to have done? And that feels like at a certain point, we completely forgot what we started talking about, you know, and we're back. We're back at spinning our wheels in this big circle of humanity.
Doug Swanson wrote the book that kind of vaulted all this before, you know, kind of grabbed Steve's attention and so many others. But, you know, he said for his part, he told Kevin Sherrington in the Dallas Morning News yesterday that his bigger gripe than the team name is the Rangers Harold Baines trade. So, that was a bigger problem in his eyes. Like I said, you know, my stepdad loves hate mail. I mean, he said publicly it's his drug of choice. It's his cocaine. He loves seeing all the reactions. So, you know, for him, but you know, it vaulted even to the point where the Rangers felt like they needed to respond. And they pretty quickly put this out. The baseball team did, of course, that the Rangers stand for equality. We condemn racism, bigotry, and discrimination in all forms, committed to listening and supporting our communities of color. And they went on to all the donations they've made to help underserved communities in Texas. As quickly as that statement came out, though, after the column was published, I do wonder if they actually, and with the current labor strife, they probably didn't have an opportunity to really visit with players of color to see if, you know, have you read this book? Have you read this column? Does it concern you?
Right. Yeah. No, it's a concern for the Ranger front office for sure. I guess it comes back to the general question of, you know, do you believe it's what an organization stood for, or do you believe it was a couple or a couple dozen or even a couple hundred, but a small percentage of your organization? And when I say that, I'm talking about the actual Texas Rangers, not the baseball team, the Washington Senators, is not to suggest that every senator has acted in a great way in his life. It's to discuss ideally what that should represent to us. And, you know, I guess I just feel like it will be a nonstop, what about game of tennis that takes us further and further from the actual thing. And by the way, I do think it's also the type of thing that get people to say, that everyone on the other side is just bonkers and I'm not dealing with them on anything right now because they tried to take Gone with the Wind away from us and they tried to take, you know, Mount Rushmore away from us. And before long, it's like, no. That's not what the original thing is about. The original thing is about what appears to be about two dozen black men or boys killed by our civil servants for situations that did not seem to be endangering the lives of the police officers and seemed to be unnecessary and an over aggression of our civil servants. And, I think that would be the more pressing thing, but it doesn't mean every other topic is completely irrelevant. So I hope that makes some sense.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, on my standpoint, you know, the Rangers, for me, it's a family thing. It runs my blood. My grandfather, if you don't know, was the original team doctor. So, you know, there's a plaque with his bust on it in the Rangers locker room. So, you know, it's a personal family history for me. And I'm not going to campaign to change the name. It wouldn't bother me if they did. I would completely understand it. But, you know, before I give it back to Aaron, just want to say I honestly don't know where I am right now on this, but I'm not drawn fully one way or the other right now. Aaron?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that's where I am too, Chris. Yeah. I think I'm in the spot where if these organizations take an introspective look and come to a decision and say, hey, this is we've reviewed it, you know, we've thought about it, this is what we stand for, and then decide either way, that's totally fine. I'm not going to jump on them for being, you know, woke, and I'm not going to jump on them for digging in their heels. What I would jump on in this regard, of course, is, is something like the Washington Redskins. And, yes. and I, you know, I think that's insane. I think it's insane that in 2020 that exists, because that's an actual identifiable racial slur. And to me, that one is indefendable, although if I say that or if I tweet that, I will find a number of people sending me links of they have found Indians who say it doesn't offend them. Very similar to all the Candace Owens videos that get sent to me or the Jason Whitlock columns that get sent to me. You can find people, by the way, of any group. You can find Liberty students that will call out Jerry Falwell Jr. You can find, you know, Indians who are not offended by racial slurs. You can find blacks that think liberals have gone too far. You can find anybody with any opinion on the internet. But to use singular examples to make the entire case against a group as the be-all, end-all, is just textbook whataboutism that I would say is again comes from an insincere desire to find solutions. It's the sincere version to be noticed and to try to add W's to your win-loss record on the internet or in debates, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I think of the Redskins as someone who's not as into sports, I'll admit, as you and Chris, being that you both work in the industry, right? But yes. I have a family on my wife's side that are Redskins fans, right? And so this mm-hmm. topic has come up over the last few years. I think of the Redskins as maybe the ones who introduced this topic, or the, you know, the fans of the Redskins or the base, right, the controversy. But it goes back to our earlier comments on how all this is, I think, kind of a journey, right? If you would have right. asked me 5 years ago, should the Redskins change their name, I probably would have told you no, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people would. And the difference from, I guess we'll call it the pre-Trump era till now, I think a lot of people have started to reflect. And I think it's very positive. No matter what your conclusion is, that we're at least having these discussions in a more sincere way.
Right. That, yeah. And that's why I think people mislabel things, because maybe they don't want to participate. But I would just challenge people as well. The term white guilt is an easy way to mislabel empathy. And I just think empathy is a sincere desire to understand somebody that you can't possibly understand, because you weren't born in an orphanage, or you never had to swim a river to get to a country, you know, perhaps to save your life or to help your family. And so I don't think that makes you guilty of anything. And I don't really like the term white guilt. And I suppose that's why it's used, is because people that try to have empathy for others are accused of, you know, being guilty about their color of skin. That's not, you know, that's not what it is. But that's where, you know, it currently goes. But I'll, you know, hey, I'm right there with you. There are tapes, I'm positive, of early in my broadcast career where I wondered aloud, why do we need like Miss Black America pageants? You know, aren't we all Americans? And, you know, why do we need this and this? And, you know, now I kind of get it. You know, I kind of get why there are black churches. I get these things. But honestly, it takes education. And, you know, it's way easier to be ignorant, because all you got to do is wake up every day and you can be ignorant. But to be educated, you might have to grab some books. You might have to watch some films. You might have to listen to people that you thought were wackos because you were raised that way, to think, man, I don't think Harry Edwards is, you know, somebody, you know, who has anything worthwhile to say, because I think my dad looked at the TV and thought Harry Edwards was a complete knucklehead. And I will tell you that I've absolutely evolved on my views that, yeah, sometimes the angry black historian has a reasonable reason to have some anger. So anyway, I this is about the point probably where my dad said he's heard enough of my liberal drivel. And
he's not listening today, is he?
I didn't know. Well, I didn't know which label, you know, he was trying to offend me more with, the drivel part or the liberal part. But I didn't think I definitely don't have a political jersey, Dad. And if you think this is drivel, I'm on the radio 4 hours a day. So I can drivel about just all sorts of things.
Yeah, we're going to do this, you know, hour and a half a week. So we have to go as long as you do.
So there's been a lot of headlines, right? So we talked a little bit about the Rangers. It's harking back to the Redskins discussion. But, man, it's been a news-heavy couple weeks. You talk about the Confederate flags in NASCAR, right? You talk about football coaches or college football coaches wearing T-shirts that upset people, right? You talk about all the way full circle to Trump in the NFL. We don't necessarily have to dig into every one of those topics, but just any thoughts there from a very kind of like political heavy sports cycle with not a lot of actual sports going on.
Yeah.
And you know, what has it been like kind of with all those hot button topics on the radio?
Unpleasant. You know, I think the entire basis of my organization, The Ticket, has been to sort of have a big family who have a lot of different backstories, but we have this huge audience and they all feel like they're part of us, you know, and they argue on behalf of us. They are loyal on behalf of us. And we really genuinely appreciate all of those who have made the station what it is. And what it is a audience that, you know, really is responsible for, you know, what we have all, you know, become. And so these are all divisive issues and they're all hitting at the same time. And unfortunately, because of the two Jersey political world we live in, one side is feeling completely under attack and the other side is saying, well, I'm happy you feel like you're under attack because you've been running how all this has worked for 100 years, which is why all these attacks are like one big thing of dominoes. Well, I get the value of all of that, but I do sincerely want to say, not that if you're really mad at me that you would watch or listen to a podcast this far in anyway, but I would say, to those people, I don't want to talk about this stuff very much either. I would love to do one 22-minute segment, post it on my Twitter. Here's what Bob thinks about the world. Listen to it if you want to. Don't listen to it if you don't want to. But we're in a spot right now where there are no games happening, where players on every team and every organization are saying, man, I see changes happening. All these things that we couldn't get changed for my dad's lifetime are now available. And if the eyes of Texas are offensive, or if the Sully statue at A&M is offensive, or if this has problematic origins, or, you know, all these things, man, now's our chance to kind of right what we thought was wrong 50 years ago, or what my parents or grandparents did, and let's get in on this. So I think that's really fascinating. I think it's a little bit shameful that my generation kind of said, let's talk about something else as opposed to changing anything when we were coming up. So the athletes of today, some of them are 18 years old, some of them are 20. They're finding that they don't have the power to get paid by the SEC or the Big 12 or any of these, but they do have the power to speak their minds and say, hey, it's time to fix this. Are they going to go too far on some things? Yeah, of course. That's not great, but that's part of change, right? Is that at times there will be overcorrection and undercorrection. To get the correction just perfect is a really tough exercise. So it's wild. It's unpleasant. We're making enemies, but we're probably also making friends. And the explosive, you are either dead right or dead wrong to the audience, you know, that's not what I'm about. That's not the type of product I've ever been responsible for. So I find myself, yes, in the middle of it. And I find myself at times kind of being championed as, you know, one of the main voices on The Ticket that are taking these things off. That is so far from my scouting report. And I look forward to getting back to that as soon as possible, because I think anybody who knows me knows really what I'm all about. But there does come a tipping point where I say, I can either continue to sit idly by or I can try to help. And I can try to help the people that I've always felt a heart for, but at times that was private, at times that was for little moments in time. But what if people come to me and say, "Hey, Bob, what do you think about all this stuff? What do you, dude? I didn't help Kaepernick at all, partly because it's complicated, but partly because, man, I don't want to deal with all the, you know, the blowback. So, you know, I probably was part of the problem more than part of the solution on that one. And I'm not saying that one is a, has a really clear WWJD application to it, because I think, you know, you have to look at about four different things. But from the standpoint of why do minority groups generally get associated with rioting or looting or breaking things to get people's attention? And in general, most people, like my family, would say, you know, why can't they just peacefully make their point without having to do A, B, and C? I kind of think that's what Colin Kaepernick was in general doing. So while I did not necessarily think, you know, that I agreed with everything, I didn't think he had to wear socks with pigs and police uniforms on it and all that sort of thing. I don't know that Fidel Castro helped make his point necessarily, but I do think taking a knee during the anthem was not the end of the world that it was portrayed to be. And, you know, so these are things that I could probably speak up a little bit more on, or even have a more educated view on, and try to break through some of the same beats that we always go through of how this always goes, because it is circular, it is maddening, and it is a way that we never progress. And so my reaction to these last couple of weeks is good on young people for figuring out a way to not just sit there and scroll their phones, which my generation, I guess, kind of did. And are they going to get everything right? Of course not. But they're trying. And that's more than my generation, I think, really did.
Last sports-related thing from me, and it's a hypothetical. And you talked about the athletes finding their voices recently, kind of understanding that that is their method for change. Go back to when Washington had the number one overall pick. Let's say Robert Griffin III starts to study and kind of starts to understand, you know, millions of Native people were slaughtered. I don't feel that the Redskins name is okay. Yeah. Let's say leading up to the draft, he says, I will not play for a team called the Washington Redskins. Would that have spurred change if he would have found his voice, if he would have decided that's what he felt, and if he would have decided to exercise his voice at that time?
Well, that's a great question. I would think he probably would have been told to shut up and dribble if it happened back then. But it would have sparked change, where ultimately, I think if that happened today, if Washington had the number two pick, don't forget Andrew Luck went first. I had to do that. but if they had the, you know, if that all happened today, that's a great question, Chris. I think if it happened now, yes. I think if it happened then, he might be the Kaepernick that kind of got persecuted and polarized and politicized and maybe even blackballed on some level. So, yeah, that's the type of way the change would happen, is taking on your own owner, because that's a lot of what this is that Daniel Snyder feels like that's his job to his political party to dig in and to not give an inch. We've seen this. I mean, we've seen that's what happens with the NRA. That's what happens with a lot of organizations, is they realize if we ever give an inch on any of this, then we have set a precedent of we will give in, and we can't give in on any of these things. Right. And so that's a great mental exercise. I might steal it for the radio at some point.
As long as you give us credit and get somebody to subscribe to this show.
I will. I think it's a great conversation. The other one that I think is a great conversation that I hope to talk about, with everybody being calm and reasoned in the next couple of weeks, is just a simple question of, is there, because this is my group, and a guy asked me this the other day, he said, you know, is there a reasonable position that holds the idea that, yes, you are very anti-racism, you are very much in favor of players having the right to say things, to try to change things in their neck of the woods, but you really feel like protocol for the national anthem is something that also is important to you? And is there that middle ground? Is there that huge part of the Venn diagram that I think a lot of us hold where, are you really going to make me choose between these two things?
Right.
Because I feel very strongly about my country, but I also feel very strongly that my country has problems. And if we can find that common ground where I think most of us actually sit, yes, we want to address these problems. We don't want any more George Floyds, no more. But we also don't want to lose sight of how we got here as a country and how many people died at age 20 on foreign soil for that reason. And that's what, you know, that's what the song and the flag do mean. Now, they're just symbols. You can burn a flag today and it will not make the entire planet implode. But can we believe in change and honoring all of our grandfathers in a productive way? And I think that's a good conversation, but I think people younger than me have decided, no, you have to choose one or the other. And I don't know that that's overly productive. I'm watching soccer this morning and, you know, maybe you guys are aware of this, maybe you aren't. They don't play the anthem in England, but they blew the whistle to start the matches and all the players on both teams take a knee. The clock is running. Like if one person doesn't take a knee, he could probably go score a goal really fast, but they all are trying to make a statement that this is not during an anthem. This is not outside the game. This is actually in the game. And I think maybe we'll see this in the States because it's a great, honestly, compromise, because you're watching the game. All the TV eyes are locked on and they take a knee and it's 10 seconds and you might ask what it's about or you know exactly what it's about. Now they've made their point. They all get up in unison and they start kicking a ball around the field and entertain us for the next 89 minutes and 50 seconds. And so I think there probably is a middle ground, but there's a ton of issues like this, the one you just raised and the one I countered with that I think are productive conversations if we can all sort of sincerely enter them with finding a solution as opposed to owning each other and racking up some sweet points.
So, Bob, one last controversial issue. We haven't talked about COVID-19. It's amazing we've gotten this far.
Right.
We know that NASCAR has come back without fans. Golf is back to an extent. We've seen sports looking at how they're going to adjust their seasons. What do you think is the long-term impact, right? So there's these short-term impacts, which are going to vary by sport, and every sport is trying to do their best.
Right.
But do you see any long-term adjustments? Are we all going to be wearing masks 3 years from now? Are there going to be any differences with how the players interact with each other, the media? Just kind of from your view, do you think COVID will be a discussion 2, 3, 4 years from now in sports?
Yeah, I do. And I also think it probably won't be the last virus that attacks us. I mean, I just think, as a world, we have populations that are greater, of course, every day than the world has ever seen. And that's going to go in one direction. And we've been great. You know, we've had a great 100 years of no pandemics. And I assume this won't be the only one in our lifetime of great consequence. So we'll, you know, how many years did we all look at news footage from Asia and wonder, why is everyone wearing a mask over there? And, you know, that was a pollution thing. But I really do think it's amazing how quickly we all went from masks are the weirdest thing you ever see to, wow, why isn't that person wearing a mask? And so it just happens that quick, right? And it's almost like if you would have told us 10 years ago that iPhones would exist, we'd all, you know, be like cavemen seeing fire. And now we can't believe someone still has a flip phone. So this is just, I think, societal changes, and we're all part of our own moment in time. But things like, do we need huge office buildings or are we accomplishing quite a bit from our laptops on our kitchen tables? You know, I assume things like this make us rethink everything. From a sports standpoint, of course, it's built around getting our entertainment dollars to the owners and the athletes, and will that have to be hugely corrected and rethought if the income has dropped substantially? Of course. Baseball actually thinks it might make more money by not playing the season. Well, that's a problem. You know, that financial model cannot sustain. TV still drives most everything. And you could argue we're watching more TV because of COVID-19. But the idea of being, you know, scheduling guy trip around, let's go see our guys play in this city and just have a great time. Yeah, I don't know when that fully resumes. And I don't know the effects, and I'm not crazy about it because that's something I love more than anything is going to the stadium and feeling in my heart that I'm more alive than people who aren't here right now. You know, that just feels great to me. That's what I'm all about. So I don't know where this goes. I do think we're going to have sports this year on a wide level, but I do think it'll mostly be through the television, and I'm cool with that. You know, that it's not great, but it's also way better than what we've just experienced for the last 100 days. And so if we have to put athletes into some sort of modified bubble to make it happen, I'm cool with it. Now, what won't be cool, of course, is if certain sports, you know, we talked about this on the radio this week, if the PGA Tour can trust all these guys to stay, you know, to house themselves and to transport themselves, and the NBA feels like everybody has to be away from their families and society for 100 days, I can definitely see that inequity being problematic to sell to all the members of your organization if you guys are way more careful. At the same time, the way more careful leagues might have a better business plan for the short term because they know they won't be interrupted by somebody making a bad choice at a nightclub. So it's wild. This is clearly something I was not trained to handle, is providing some sort of authoritative voice on the issues of the day. And sometimes I have like a 30-second warning on the issue of the day. Like the Mike Gundy stuff just popped up in a break. And now we're going to do a segment about it. And now, you know, okay, so have I had a chance to think it through? Have I had a chance to even research what that network was? Of course not. So we're flying blind, man. But this is I guess this is what I signed up for on some level. And you know, I'm happy we still have a great audience, but these are, you know, there's enough things to debate. There's no question about that.
Well, I'll tell you, there's at least one more outlet for revenue for the sports team. So this week, I finally, after a long wait, received my Dallas Mavericks mask 3-pack. So I have a Mavs mask 3-pack. Unfortunately, the Cowboys ones keep on going further and further on back order. So I guess that tells you something about the Metroplex, right? But pretty soon I'll be able to support my teams. But kind of a funny story here that I'll end with is that at the beginning of this, you remember there was a hand sanitizer run. That was probably the first thing that we ran out of, right?
Yeah, that toilet paper.
And I was trying to look for where could I get hand sanitizer that no one would think about, right? And I thought, I've been to plenty of sports games. They always have those little bottles of Cowboys or Rangers or Mavs, right? And so I went to Rally House, Texas, actually to their website, and they have a warehouse that has every sports team in the country with hand sanitizer.
Wow.
So I told just my close friends, I hate to say that, where they could find it. So I actually have some Rangers. I have some FC Dallas, but I have an odd collection of Chicago White Sox. And the reason why is out of the whole country, there were two teams that were on sale. They were the White Sox and the Iowa Hawkeyes. And you could buy them for a dollar cheaper than everyone else. So
wow.
That's my little humorous story that I still carry in my store. And in fact, no one else listening to the podcast will be able to see this, but I'm showing Bob Texas Rangers.
Well done. That's great. Have you become like an outlet yourself? And
no, they didn't.
A reseller.
It didn't work out so well for that guy on eBay. I don't know if you read that story at the beginning of the pandemic, but there was a guy in, I think, Illinois who decided when all this happened that he was going to rent a U-Haul and buy up. And he ended up accumulating 17,000 bottles, not joking, of hand sanitizer, and then tried to unload them on eBay, and they got him for price gouging, right? And so he got guilted by the kind of Twitter mob into donating them. So I'm sure that was a fun conversation with his wife.
Yes.
But, you know, we'll leave that one there.
That's wild.
Speaking of donations, I've got a corner of my bedroom that's always active with things I've outgrown, things I don't want anymore. And every year they go up to the ticket studios for the Drop Your Pants drive, which benefits Cornerstone Clothes Closet in South Dallas. Given COVID-19, given our limited interaction these days, are you still going to be able to do that kind of drive? And if not, how can anybody listening help Cornerstone Clothes Closet?
Well, I would say, first of all, thank you. And yes, we are planning on something, but I think we're probably going to pivot this year a little bit into making it more of an online thing. Now, if you have a stack of jeans, we will still try to figure out a way for you to get those directly to Cornerstone because they need jeans. But I think this year, and I have to still get approval, but I think we will probably make it so we're not trying to figure out, okay, you know, how many volunteers, what sort of protection do volunteers need and donors need and sorters need. And it takes an army of people.
Yeah.
So I think maybe for this year and this year only, given the predictable circumstances, we're probably going to take it online. And it might be something where if we can raise funds, then the Cornerstone people can go buy new pairs of jeans for this year. And try to tackle it that way with some sort of wholesale pricing. And really, you know, I realize a lot of people have enough places for their money to go, but maybe this year in lieu of donations, we can raise money for Cornerstone. We'll have details on that coming up soon, but I definitely, homelessness, poverty, none of this ended in 2020. In fact, it probably multiplied.
Sure.
And so we still want to figure it out, but we also don't want to expose anyone to health risks of any sort. So I think the best way would probably kind of make it drop your pants for 1 year. And maybe we'll return to our old form after that, or maybe it will be such a smashing success. I don't know, but thank you. It's cornerstonedallas.org. If people want to figure out if they have a stack of jeans, by all means, they would probably still love them, but I'm not positive we're going to have a huge day in September, just because who knows what September could hold by, you know, second wave style and everything, third wave, where we'll be by then.
No, I loved going down to the studio and, getting my free hockey tickets. That was my one way to go to a Stars game every year, because those really good tickets for Stars games will go way over my monthly entertainment budget. So,
yes. No, I get it.
And you can go lower level for free. I'll take it.
That's right.
Obviously, it's not about that. It's about benefiting the people of South Dallas who need those clothes to survive. Totally. To potentially, some of those clothes are nice enough where they can use them to go on a job interview.
That's right.
So it's a great cause, and I've been happy to support it for the past few years. Bob, really appreciate your time. You know, when I put in my birthday request to Dan, I usually make some kind of joke about who my leader is, but truly you are my sports talk leader. So
thank you so much.
I really do appreciate the time.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks, it's been Bob. Fun hanging out with you.
So now it's time for the What We're Into segment. Each week, we're going to have a segment about what Chris and I are into right now. It could be a show, it could be an app, it could be anything really, but hopefully you'll find it interesting. So this week, we're going to talk about what shows we have been binge watching during coronavirus while the whole country has been locked down. And we'll maybe even get to some podcasts and some other things. So I'm going to start it off with asking Chris, what are you binge watching right now?
We just finished Space Force on Netflix, which is Steve Carell basically mocking what the new branch of the military will look like. And we tore through it very quick. I think we watched at least two episodes every night until we finished the series. Really, really funny. Kind of a few little jabs at the current administration, but nothing too over the top. So I think whichever side of the political spectrum you fall on, as long as you can take a little bit of a joke, I think you're going to really like it.
That's awesome. I've seen a little bit of the show, but I feel like I've gotten kind of overwhelmed during this time with what to watch, because everybody is recommending something to watch, right?
Sure.
So the nation kind of started off, I think, universally with Tiger King, which was like...
I am the only person in the world who hasn't got to that. Have you?
Yeah, I watched some of it. I can't say that I made it through the whole thing. I know who the characters are now. I get the general plot. But it's been absolutely like, you know, pandemonium on Twitter, or was on Twitter when this was all going on. I mean, there were just jabs and memes everywhere. But then I think things kind of evolved and calmed down there. And the next thing was The Last Dance. And I haven't watched it, and I'm actually kind of ashamed to say
that. Really?
Yeah. And you know what? I think the listeners will quickly figure out that I'm not as big of a sports guy as you, because you work in sports, you announce sports, right? you know everything there is to know about kind of announcing.
Not quite. No, that was Bob. Knows all there is to know. I am very, very lowly compared to him. No.
Well, I mean, you can talk high school football and college sports and professional, which is great, but I actually lived in Chicago. I was a young child, but I lived in Chicago during all six championships.
Wow. I would have thought that would have made you completely locked in from the first second on that then.
Yeah. I kind of missed the first couple episodes for whatever reason. And then once I got behind, I just wasn't real easy to catch up. I think you had to record the episodes individually or something like that. So I can't wait until it comes to streaming. I'm not sure if it's all
available.
It'll
be on Netflix soon. Okay. It was a co-production with Netflix and ESPN. So Netflix gets streaming rights for however many months, and then it'll move to the ESPN streaming service. But yeah, no, I would highly recommend it. I mean, there were definitely some slow parts. Like, they probably could have done this in about half the time. The Dennis Rodman episode was a lot less interesting than I thought it was going to be. He, as eccentric as he was, I think they could have made that a little bit more interesting. But for the most part, fascinating. And the footage they were able to capture was just incredible. And the fact they were able to hold on to it for so long after such a big project. The only thing that could be like it, I guess, in future years is there was a film crew much the same way with the Bulls in that final season, following Kobe Bryant around during his final NBA season. So yeah. One day we're going to see a documentary much in this style, although kind of the idea with The Last Dance was that Michael Jordan had complete control. And of the documentary that he didn't want out there, if there was something that got filmed that he wanted to be kept private, he had that right. And I think that was the same concept with what Kobe had going on there. So obviously now it'll be up to his family to decide, all right, that is not meant for public view. So, we'll see. But no, I watch it. Whenever it comes out on streaming, you want to watch that, especially the fact that you were living in Chicago. That'll make you appreciate it even more.
Yeah, I did hear a little bit of the blowback. I know there was some controversy around maybe the Gary Payton comments with Jordan, and then also how, you know, a few people were portrayed on the Bulls. I mean, Scottie Pippen most notably, but some of the kind of lower cast, I guess, if you will, of the Bulls that was in and out or in more supporting roles didn't like exactly how they were portrayed. So very interested to see that when I have a chance.
Now it's time for Aaron's quick pick. It could be an app, a website, a kitchen appliance, whatever has caught your eye in the past week.
Yeah, and this is not so much recent that I found out about it, but I've continued to use it, and kind of going with the theme today about what we're watching, I think it's really interesting. So for years, and this is going to get a little bit into my technology roots here, right? If you bought a movie or a show on your iPhone and you wanted to watch it on a different device, it really wasn't possible. I mean, you could watch it on another Apple device, but you couldn't watch it anywhere else. If you're an Android user, you'd buy a, you know, a movie or a show on Google Play, or if you're into Amazon, right? And you were restricted kind of into these silos. And starting a couple of years ago, I believe it was Disney that got together a consortium called Movies Anywhere. And they got the top five studios, I believe it was, to allow you to watch your movies and your content on every device, right? And so what that means is if you buy a movie on Amazon because it's on sale, you can now watch it on your iPhone. If you buy a movie through an Android phone or an Android tablet that maybe your spouse has, your kid who has a different device can wear it. And it's really kind of changed how we've done things because one, it allows you to shop for the best deals on content, right? So if Apple has a sale one week and Google has a sale the next week, you can purchase it there and watch it anywhere. But it's also allowed things like, hey, you just want a cheap tablet, you know, like an Amazon Fire tablet, for your kid to watch TV on, they can now watch all the movies that you previously bought through your Apple TV, right? And so it's been a really cool thing and it helps people save money. So my pick is Movies Anywhere.
Okay. We'll get the link to that in the show notes. Also, we'll link to Steve Chapman's column about the Texas Rangers and his belief that it's time for the team to change names that we talked about with Bob earlier. Look for that as well. And, you know, again, full disclosure, that's my stepdad writing that column. So we're giving him a little pub, but it got some national play. So good. We could get Bob's opinion on that. But episode one in the books, you sure you want to do this again?
I think so. Same time, same place, right?
We'll try to put it out into the world around the same time each week, depending on how our schedules go. But regardless, as long as you're subscribed, you'll see it pop up. And we hope you'll tell your friends. We hope you'll spread the word a little bit about what we're doing here on No Longer Neighbors. Aaron, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Episode one in the books, No Longer Neighbors. Appreciate listening.